Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 68 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. If you are a theater professional or you know any, make sure you or they go to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free theater professional profile. It's simple. Just go to curtaincallonline.com. Put in your email address and create a password, and off you go. And I do have to apologize because we haven't had a podcast for the last couple of weeks, but that's because we've been launching our new site. We are launching loads of new functions and that give the theater professional tools that make their lives easier as they go about being a theater professional. If you would like to take full advantage of what Curtain Call has to offer, we launch our jobs section this week. It is so exciting. We've spent the last 6 months developing the site, and we've launched with tons of new functions. Like I've mentioned before, they're going to roll out over the next couple weeks, but jobs are going live. So to take advantage of this function and loads of others, just sign up for a pro account. Go over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up today. But that's enough for me. How about this week's podcast? We have seen a multitude of recent examples of high-profile actresses making acceptance speeches at award nights, speaking out about the unequal representation of actresses on stage and screen recently, kicking off with Denise Goff at the 2017 Olivier Awards, and actually Jimmy Nesbitt, actor, at the BAFTA TV Awards, and continuing to the trend as witnessed by Deirdre Mullins' speech after picking up a Best Actress in Film Award at the Scottish BAFTAs. They've all been brilliant, powerful, evocative speeches, and the movement is still growing strong. And I had the opportunity to sit down at the National Theatre a couple weeks ago, who have just announced themselves that there will be equal representation on stage, the gender balance by 2021, which is great. I sat down with two equal representation for actresses members, advocates, and campaigners, Polly Kemp and Jenny Matthews. Having met Jenny at a Monobox event, and you'll hear me talking about Monobox a lot in the future, and I think I have in the past, well, Jenny reached out to me about the possibility of doing this podcast, which I absolutely jumped at. We at Curtain Call believe wholeheartedly in the aims of ERA 5050 and are partnering with them to ensure that our shared values can reach the most number of people possible, giving it the greatest outreach that we can. These two incredible actresses and I spoke for nearly an hour, but don't worry, this is an edited version. Hopefully it will fit into your commute, but I think you will agree that their story and vision is truly, truly inspiring. And this is a movement that you should, and I know you will, get behind. So listen, that's enough of me talking. Have a listen.
So I'm Polly Kemp, and I am an actress of almost 30 years now. And I'm also co-founder of a grassroots activist movement called Equal Representation for Actresses.
Okay.
That starts, or do you want more?
Brilliant. That's great. That's great.
This is a load more.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get there, definitely.
Yeah. And I'm Jenny Matthews. I am also an actress. I have
quite new. I'm a bit of a newbie
to
the industry. I also run a film production company as well. I just started doing some of my own shorts.
Nice.
And I'm also a committee member
of
Equal Representation for Actresses.
Great stuff. So if I can start with just so people get a background about what you do. So you've, you said you're actually married 30 years. I mean, because this will all inform, I think, people hearing why you started ERA and you know, how did you get in the business? How's it been for you? And you know, you've got quite a lot of experience. And we'll start with you, Polly. But what?
I suppose I became an actress because there was no place for me in my school. I'd moved from Liverpool to the north, and I felt like an outsider, and there was, I didn't really fit in, apart from weirdly, you know, showing off on stage. So I don't remember the moment, although I loved black and white movies. I used to love the in summer holidays when they used to do those seasons of films, Shirley Temple films, or they do, you know, Elvis films, or they do Bette Davis films, or, you know, I loved all of those. So, you know, I don't remember that particular moment. It just was an evolution. And then I came to London and I worked in London as a nanny. And I auditioned for drama school and I got a place at the Drama Centre London.
Nice.
And I think probably in a sense that might be where my sort of consciousness of my lack of importance within the industry, because it was a very male-dominated drama school. And when in my second year, I was told halfway through my second year, and it wasn't anything to do with my acting ability.
Yeah.
I was told that I wouldn't have a place in the third year unless I lost weight. So I went from 11 and a half stone to, at my latest, just £2 under 7 stone.
Oh, my Lord.
And it was really quick, and instead of anybody caring for that, they were telling me how brilliant I was. The ballet teacher congratulated me in front of the class because she could now see my ribs. And I did get a great part in the third year. In my first term, I got a great part, which actually I wasn't terribly good at. but, you know, but this idea of me having to adjust myself, bend myself out of shape to suit something that wasn't necessarily me. I'm not saying that is everybody's experience, but that's where I feel like, for me, this sense of unfairness sort of was, that was sown. I was really lucky because I left drum school with an agent. I was one of the few women that left with an agent. And my first job was at the RSC, and I went there for 3 years, and I had a great line of parts. But I did notice that women predominantly sort of occupied the support role, so dresses, wardrobe, wigs, admin, and maybe the odd stage manager, and ASMs. But as you went up, it was mostly men. The shows, obviously, because the house writer is a man, and they are, you know, to do with the time that they were written, they're particularly male dominated. Obviously there was no cross casting then, so clearly there weren't opportunities there. There was new writing, and at the very end of my sort of 3 year stint there was a really beautiful play by Peter Wheeling called The Bright and Bold Design, which they had commissioned and was put on, and it featured most of the young women from the company, and it was our first chance to really get to do something really wonderful. And it was programmed for 24 shows or something. And I remember going up to management and saying, you know, is there any way that this could go back to Stratford? But I was young and I probably didn't do it in a very effective way, and probably it came from a place of being a bit chippy rather than being sort of articulate. And it fell on stony ground. Of course, I didn't understand about programming, that you can't do that. You know, there was a whole heap of stuff I didn't understand, but, you know.
But you brought it up. You felt like you had to say something.
I think it's just about being conscious that this, you know, that my male contemporaries were having more opportunities to really shine and fly and have fun, and those opportunities were less for me.
Yeah. Can I take you? So, I just want to, because you do have the, you know, the career and the longevity. You've been an actress for that long, but you also, when we were pre-record, we talked about you were involved in casting as well.
Yeah.
So that must have given you an insight. Like, so in the last how many ever years, whatever, you kind of, I don't want you to talk about 50-50 yet, because I'm getting Jennifer to tell me about where she's coming, but, you know, so that, the experience of you casting, was that an easy jump to go from actress to casting, and then to where you are now, or is it just something you fell into?
I sort of fell into it.
Yeah.
Nina Gold, who's,
love,
we all
Nina,
know,
yes.
Fabulous casting director.
Love her. Thank you, Nina.
We sort of knew each other because her partner slash husband slash father of her children, as brother, was, we were at drama school together, and so I sort of knew her, and then she cast me in a couple of really sweet commercials back in the day when you used to make sweet money from a commercial.
Yes, I remember those days.
Yeah. And then one time I rang her about a Fringe show that I was doing. I've never been very good at self-promotion.
Yeah.
And I rang her up because the other people in the cast wanted me to ring her up and get her to the show. And I found myself talking about everything else other than that, and was saying, oh, yes, I've learned how to use computers, and now I know how to touch type. And instead of coming to see the show, she said, why don't you, if you're not working, do you want to come and work in the office? And so I started working in the office, and I started taking sessions, and then people who knew Nina, like Sasha Robertson, or other assistants of hers, Rosalie Clayton, or Carmel Cochran, or, you know, would give me a job.
Oh,
and
nice.
I used to take casting sessions for adverts.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few of us that did it. But it was great. You know, I got to sit in the room for some really interesting film projects. Mm. And I don't think, actually, in terms of politically, the 50-50, I think that sort of went from my consciousness. What I was really aware of was the difference between, you know, people who came into the room with the, you know, they come in smelling nice, looking great, with a kind of confidence that you knew that they'd get a job. You know, I learned to identify people who were clearly struggling and, you know, the effect that might have on their ability to get a job. So I think purely from the view of observing and...
That's like a whole nother drama school that you went to then.
Jennifer,
bring you in here. Like, so you, I mean, I've only been here a little while, but I know how active you are in extracurricular kind of movements or things that are happening. So what has been your journey to where you are today? You're an actress. I know that you've done some work or studying in New York as well as you.
Yep.
So take me through. So I'd like to arrive at the point of where we're sitting down at the table and then go from there in a minute.
Well, I'm also from the north. I don't know if you can tell my accent. So I was always that kid that couldn't stand things that weren't fair. You know, like in primary school, I started a massive petition because the girls weren't allowed to wear trousers.
Yeah.
And my mum had to go in and had to go to the head teacher, and I was like, I want to wear trousers. I don't get why I can't wear trousers. And I've always been that person. And again, it's labelled me as the difficult person or the person who won't shut up. And I've always just thought, well, that's not who I am. I'm not a difficult person. I just think fair's fair.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I, very, very, very working class rugby northern town where actually there's a lot of creative people from my town.
Yeah.
But it was never an option. That was not.
Right. Like, it wasn't what you did.
No, like I would lie to my friends if I was in a play. Like no one knew I would do that stuff at all. And I'm a singer, so I used to do a lot of singing gigs, and people would be like, where are you going? Why aren't you coming out? And I'd be like, oh, I can't, I'm not well. Because it's just not what you do. Mm-hmm. So then I got on, so drama school was never in my head. Like, I didn't really know there were drama schools, to be perfectly honest. So I came to London with my boyfriend, who got a job down here. That's the only reason I'm here, to start with. And I thought, oh, maybe I could go to university through clearing. Mm-hmm. So I went and did theatre studies at university. And in the first year, I thought, actually, I'm quite like, I don't like being told that this is who I am or this is what I can achieve. So I set up a theatre company, all female theatre company. And I just consistently got told that, oh, you're feminist. Oh, this is what it is. And I just remember thinking, but I'm also human as well. And I'm this and... So we did a lot of... I did about 30 different Fringe plays with them, producing them, directing them as well as being in them, writing a couple of little things. And I just was like, there's got to be more than someone telling me I have to be a certain way. But, you know, everybody gets their thing, mm-hmm. don't they? I'm a regional scrappy part. That's what I get given. Do you know what I mean? And as much as...
Yes, we talked about this the other night, didn't we, about what your box is.
Yeah, my box. And I, it's not that I love being from where I'm from. But I'm also an actor, and that's what the job is. And I can do other things. And you know, Maxine Peake, from playing Hamlet, for me, I was like, yes, like, whether you like her or that performance or whatever, like, that is just, that to me, I was like, yeah, okay, there has to be something done about this. And then I read Lucy Kerbel's book, mm-hmm. The All Change, Please.
Mm-hmm.
And she used a analogy about the 5p plastic mm-hmm. tax bag, you know, the tax. And I was like, I don't know, something just clicked, and I thought, actually, yeah, you don't have to, because I'd be sitting there thinking, how can I take over the world? Like, oh my God, and it would be overwhelming. And then I just thought, you can just do something little, and then mm-hmm. that little will get bigger, and then that will get bigger, and someone else can do something little. And so then I found out about ERA, because at the Monobox, which is where we met, at one of our Q&As, Deirdre Mullins, another fantastic actress, mm-hmm. part of the campaign, came and talked to me about it. And I was like, oh, how can I help? What can I do? I'll do the admin. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And I came to her, so she brought me to a meeting, because she's a friend of a friend anyway, which isn't everybody in the industry.
Yeah.
And I just, from there, I've just like...
become invaluable.
I just
it's what, you've done.
Yeah, I just have all of this, like... So, and then I'm here because you, fantastic man, came to the Monobox, and I was like, please, let's do something.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, well, I'd really love to know, like, what spurred you on to kind of mm-hmm. go, right, here is the moment, you know, mm-hmm. we can do the moment to start the movement has to start, like, today, and this is what it's going to be. ERA, it's going to be 50-50. You know, when was that little spark that... I know you talked about the sparks that you've had throughout your career, but when was the moment you went, right, now we're doing this?
Yeah, it was a very clear point in time.
Oh, good.
There was in late 2015, there was the Gina Davis report, Gender Bias Without Borders, came out, which was research on 700 films across 11 countries. Mm-hmm. And then Eva Wiseman did an article entitled something like, There Are Women Everywhere, But Why Can't I See Them in Films?
Mm-hmm.
Waking the Feminist Movement kicked off in Dublin when they announced the, you know, Voice of the Nation, I think it was called, or something, and the Abbey Theatre, it was all male writers celebrating the Irish literary history, and there was two women. And at the same time, Suffragette came out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something about that film coming out, talking about 100 years of suffrage, but at the same time, there was all this information coming out that actually, even though we had the vote and we had this massive fight, we still didn't occupy the kind of space that we should in film, theatre and television.
Mm-hmm.
So Elizabeth Berrington, who is the other co-founder, was furious.
Mm.
And she sent a text out to all her contacts. And that text then got forwarded to their contacts, and that's where I managed to pick it up.
Yeah.
And I think at that moment, for me, it was like, you know, I'm middle-aged, so work is drying up. I still work, I still do jobs.
Yep.
But they're getting smaller and smaller, and it's getting harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted Lizzie and said, I will do this with you. And, you know, I'll sort of do organisational stuff. Because she's got, you know, a higher profile than me, you can mm-hmm. get the contacts, I'll do the background.
Yeah.
And we met up in a cafe in East Dulwich, and that was the moment really where it was formed.
Yeah.
And then we had an initial meeting in London in Soho Theatre, where a lot of people who were in that email chain came along, and, you know, Olivia came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sarah Hadland, Felicity Montague, Denise came, mm-hmm. Denise Goff, you know, so and lots of younger actresses, lots of actresses who were on the telly a lot in the 90s but just disappeared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we took that as a mandate really to push forward. you know, the statistics, just to clarify the statistics, you know, what Gina Davis found was that it is between 2-1 or 3-1 men for every one female.
Mm, yeah.
That in films, yeah, as an average,
right,
in crowd scenes, women occupy 17%. And we were really concerned that, you know, that what does this, what's the societal message of this? You know, women watching films, seeing themselves occupying the tiniest of spaces, you know, feeling that they lack agency on screen, you know, what was the effects of that when you go out into the world? And I, you know, certainly recently it's become really clear actually how that power dynamic has been operating in our industry. And
yeah,
I think, I personally think there is definitely a connection between the type of stories that are told about women and the type of roles that they play and the fact that we're not there in numbers with agency. That it's very easy to think, to objectify us or to push us away or exclude us. So we were, you know, it's taken us 2 years to get to the point where we are becoming, I think, very coherent and very clear.
Yeah.
It's been a long process, an evolution of trying to understand where the problem lies. So initially it was about, well, we're not on stage and we're not on screen, so just put us there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we came across a tool that would just, you know, you would gender flip and you would just put us
in the
story, the Naropa.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Everyone should definitely read about what Naropa is.
And
then
maybe you could put a link.
I'm writing that down a little bit.
And I think Lucy Kerbel has got also, has worked, you know, has
she's
got
just
a sort
incredible,
of,
isn't
yeah,
she?
She's
what
brilliant.
She does is incredible.
And actually, her symposium, her advanced symposium, had been that year as well, actually, in the 2015. However, it is clear that we do not, we're not 50-50 on boards. If you were to look at the boards of, say, ITV, Channel 4 and BBC, they're predominantly male. I think it's, you know, I do have the numbers somewhere. Do I have them here, right to hand? You know, the BBC, it's 9 men to 4 women. The RSE, it's 10 men to 4 women. The National, it's 7 men to 5 women.
Yeah.
And Channel 4, it's 10 men to 2 women.
Yeah.
And these are the people who are making sure that these organisations are fulfilling their remit.
Yeah.
And so if they're going to, you know, there are all sorts of quite general statements about 50-50 organisationally, and there's some sense that they hint about, you know, we need to increase representation on stage and on screen, but there's nothing definite. And I just feel like unless you've got 50-50 women on those boards, how are you going to push?
Enforcing stuff as well.
And actually, just to go back on your point about awareness raising, awareness raising is definitely our main point.
Yeah.
However, we're planning an event next year. So we've got an event happening in February.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're wanting to do is to celebrate the 100 years of the female vote, of women, votes for women. That sounds, female votes sounds slightly clinical. Votes for women.
Votes for women.
And what we want to do is to invite those people who are the gatekeepers, the influencers, to come along and to listen to our solutions, because we do have solutions, and to go away and look at their organisations and say, how can I improve the gender balance on the board, at board level? Mm-hmm. How can I improve gender balance at the management level? And not just CFOs and COOs.
Yeah.
We want creative directors to be women.
Yeah, of course.
Let's have a look at, you know, what we're not just commissioning, but what we're producing, and making sure that we are producing 50% women.
Yeah.
And we know from our stats that women write more gender balanced casts. So if you do that, I mean, inevitably the solution or the result will be more women on screen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nuances within that. Specifically, we're very concerned about women over 40.
Yeah.
You know, statistically, men between 40 and 59 actually hit their sweet spot. That's where they're getting the most parts and the most money.
Yeah.
And actually, you have a directly proportional
slide
for women.
Yeah, yeah, I remember when I, because I literally, not that long ago, someone just said to me, you've got like 2 years, you'll hit your prime and then that's it, they'll go. So make sure you make your name now in these next 2 years. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I've got two years now before all the jobs go. Like, I feel like I've just started. Yeah.
I could commit 2 years to it.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, what does that mean? It's a bit like, because we did an article in the States, didn't we?
Yeah. And you did it rather brilliantly.
But the one of the points, it was like a top tip, you know, like a tip. Yeah. Like, because we are about solutions, aren't we? We're not just highlighting problems. We're like, actually, this can be done, or this is a way of maybe addressing that. We were talking about like letting the stories write themselves a bit more. Mm. Like, because actually, I think commissioning is so, like, that's what I do a lot of my research on, is it's just... Some of the stories, it's like unconscious bias. Mm.
You know, this is why we've worked so hard on tone, is that if a woman objects, she's being difficult or annoying. If a man objects, he's being assertive and dynamic. Yeah. So it's, you know, so yes, we do want to challenge, definitely. But, you know, sadly, we still have to be very mindful of how that's perceived. Mm. And we don't want to be perceived as shrill harpies, which is, you know, is going to be some... person's interpretation, because we're going to be asking them to think in, you know, to consider things, you know, an awful lot more than they have been doing. You know, I feel like we, our industry, we're the second best performing industry in this country, I believe now, entertainment, which covers everything. Yeah. You know, so I think it's something like 12% GDP. It's enormous, second only to construction.
Yeah.
You know, it's expanding. It's huge. But I feel that it works in a kind of weird hinterland where it's all about making money, and people use very commercial corporate attitudes towards creating the product.
Yeah.
But they don't conform to what corporations or people in the city do, which is a lot of regulation and monitoring.
Yeah.
There appears to be, to my mind, no regulation or monitoring of the product that we produce.
Can I just ask you how you see the people coming into the industry are taking to it as well? Because I think it's really important, because that's the future, really. We talk about going forward. Like, that is who's going to... be supporting the 50-50 campaign, the ERA campaign. It's like, how are they taken, or how important is it to the reach out and engaging that audience?
I think I find, so I have friends who, you know, graduated from schools the same year I graduated from university and whatever, and a lot of them they aren't involved in the industry anymore at all, because it's consistently... a consistent battle to try and find something. And just one example of when that was like really like light bulby for me was that I had like a supernumerary audition at the RSC. They'd maybe called 60 of us, and I remember at the end of the day they explained, you know, what was going to happen, and I knew, and then I was then told as one of the potentially 10 out of the, you know, 10 women that were there, girls I guess, some of us, and that we wouldn't be actually doing that. We'd be holding a moon. We wouldn't get to be any of the soldiers. We wouldn't be using that. And I just remember thinking, well, I don't want to do it then. Oh, but that's not, again, coming back to the not fair thing. And I think a lot of people who don't have that, just as a person who can't stand that unjust, drop away because... Yeah. They don't want to do that part.
Yeah.
But they can't understand, after they've trained to do all of these other things, why they don't get to do what they see their male counterparts doing.
Yeah.
I did a little short the other day. There was a girl through NYT, which is fantastic. Everyone should be in NYT. And this girl, and she's coming to her next meeting.
All right, great.
and she's a young director, and she's doing something at the Rose Theatre.
Nice.
And she was like, yeah, well, they just took a chance on me because I'm like one of the young girls. And I was like, oh, what do you mean they took a chance on you? Like, you're a director. They shouldn't. Yeah. So I'm not sure if I answered your question. But
no,
I think
that's fine. Yes, it's the experience of young women coming up.
I think people, it's a very, very different experience for a young girl. And if you're a young girl from outside of London, first of all, trying to break the London bubble is hard.
Yeah.
And second of all, then trying to then make sure you're in the tent and pretending if you're in the tent or not, blah, blah, blah. Like, that is, it's, you've got to be I don't know. You've got to and your mental health, all that sort of stuff then comes into question about how can you keep doing every day? Can you keep doing this? Can you be resilient enough? Or what the hell does that mean? Or should you have to be that resilient?
So in terms of young graduates, there is a group of really fabulous young women who've just left Lambda and Bristol Olvic, who formed themselves into, I think they're called Gemma, and they're kind of our little sister organisation. Mm-hmm. And they are trying to, you know, create a space for women who've just left drama school. To meet at.
Yeah.
And it is about equality, and they are definitely affiliated with us. So, you know, I would say to any young graduate is look on our website, look on their website, get on Twitter, have a look, because
there's definitely groups, people out there doing things, 100%.
So, which brings me to the social media, to the message of getting it out there. Yeah. I mean, you guys are quite active, and you get people tweeting about 50-50 and the ERA's message and things, and let's put it out there. How can people, by doing what they can do, like embolden and empower equal representation for actresses and 50-50 campaign? Mm-hmm. Because you help each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is the message, geometric progression can happen with the one person speaking to the two people speaking to the four people.
Yeah.
What can they do, and how does that work within your campaign?
So definitely I would say that, so we have a website, which is, this is a snappy title, www.equalrepresentationforactresses.co.uk.
Amazing.
Yep. The word, and that's so long. We couldn't get ERA, that domain site had gone, so we had to have the long version. And you can, on there, there's an email info@, and so you can contact us, and you can plug in, you can tell us who you are and how much you'd like to be involved, or even just to say, hi, I'm here, I'm an actress, and I just want somebody to know I'm here. And we can plug you in as much or as little as you'd like to.
And that is genuine as well, because I'm relatively new to the campaign and I literally turned up, and you can be as involved, and there is no, it's not like one of those where you go, oh God, I've signed up for something and now there's loads of pressure for me to do something. It's not about that, is it, at all?
You know, we try really, really hard to be inclusive and equal and fair. That's, you know, and also because we're women, we're incredibly polite. There's always a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And a piece of cake.
Nice.
So you can get involved. We're quite interested because of what's happened recently with the Harvey Weinstein revelations, and also then, you know, what's going to follow.
The repercussions, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Is our badges, which are available through our website.
Yeah, we'll get onto badges in a minute because I want to. Yeah.
But we want women to start wearing our badges in rehearsal spaces and in auditions to send out the message that it's not okay to oppress women. The oppression of women in this industry has been here, you know, since time immemorial, and it's on a spectrum. It starts with exclusion and ignoring at one end, and it goes through bullying, taunting, you know, and name calling, through to sexual assault at the other end. So there's a huge spectrum. So if you wear our badge, what we want to do is to start saying that this badge means that, you know, you are demanding respect, and you're demanding that that you're kept safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we would very much like people to start doing that.
Yeah. Guys, if you're listening, guys and girls, or guys and people, I should say, get yourself a badge, because I think it's brilliant. I think great to show that rehearsal room was a safe place or was aware. I think it is the awareness of people have the badge.
And you know, let us be the brave, that using that word about instead of being that person that
and that's
shouts
why
out,
it's essential that men do wear it, because then as women we know that there's a man there who understands, and we know that, you know, my experience as a younger actress was that I was bullied a lot in rehearsal rooms, and I didn't feel that I was able to articulate that. I think if men wear that, it means that we know that you're supporting us, and if we speak out, you'll stand behind us, which is what we need. There's quite a lot of activities that we're engaged in. We've done two newsletters.
Okay.
We probably need to do another one.
Yeah.
So the newsletters aren't I'd say, aren't frequent at the moment, but you, by signing up, you become part of our mailing list.
Perfect.
And for when we have our events next year, you'll be on that mailing list. But also, if you contact us, you can start coming to meetings and being part of our team. And we need women to be part of our team.
And so if you're looking for ambassadors, as it were, as well, like if there's anybody that, you know, any actresses listening to Jade that are visible or whatever, you know, and want to help the cause as well, if you're looking for brand ambassadors.
And then it would be a case of like literally, what do you want to do? How do you want to be involved?
Yeah.
Well,
because we had at the BAFTAs, we did a really successful badge bombing, and Olivia Colman, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and Jimmy Nesbitt all stood up with our badges on. Jimmy particularly,
he was amazing. Yeah, with Phoebe, was great to see her. Yeah. I mean, she's incredible. Well, Olivia's incredible. It's all incredible. I mean, I think what a great trio of people to be shouting.
So join that band.
Okay. Yeah, join it. Yeah, exactly.
And if you have any questions, Polly or Jennifer or anyone at ERA.
You've
got my own email now.
Great.
There we go. Jenny with an IE, guys, actually.
Double N IE.
And Polly.
So Polly at Equal Representation.
Yeah, great.
And info.
Get in touch. Tweet, follow, do everything.
Tweet us. We love Twitter.
So you can get us through Twitter.
Yeah.
And we do have a Facebook presence
and
as well.
And Instagram. Actually,
and we have Instagram as well.
Yeah, amazing. We do.
Twitter's at @era_5050 or era50_50.
Right.
But you can.
You'll find us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Polly Kemp and Jenny Matthews there from Equal Representation for Actresses. Now, before we wrap up, if you are a theater professional and want to join the network built by theater professionals for theater professionals, I can guarantee you it's the only one out there that's been built like that. Everyone who works here at Curtain Call is a theater professional, and we're very, very, very proud of it. It is a network that grows every day. Then head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free Curtain Call profile. It is absolutely free. You just need your email address and create a password, and you can create a profile. It's that simple. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's at Curtain Call, all one word, all lowercase. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast, just get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. That's John with an H. It leaves me to say a huge thank you to Polly Kemp and Jenny Matthews for their time and insight. The National Theatre Dorfman Foyer for the perfect place for chocolate and coffee, and obviously showing children around, which is all that noise in the background, and to the Equal Representation for Actresses organization. Follow them on Twitter at era50_50 or go to equalrepresentationforactresses.co.uk. I will put links in the show notes. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theatre Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.